So anytime you're relating to a healthcare position, you know, you have to take into consideration that you're working with patients here. We not only do use strategy upfront in hiring people that are skilled to work with the patients and have that level of compassion, but we also use different strategies that make it tangible for 2024, right? So in this current day and state.
Welcome to Collecting Thoughts, CNR Software's new podcast. We are your one-stop shop for digestible industry news, anecdotes, and advice as told by the boots-on-the-ground industry leaders and subject matter experts. We'll be covering topics across the collection space, technology, and finance. I'm your host, Christina, and I'm happy to have you join us. Today's guest is Michelle Sturr, RCM Director of Collections for Emerita. Originally graduating pre-med from Regis University, Michelle has been in the revenue cycle management industry since 2013. After owning her own medical billing and coding business, she transitioned to corporate in 2020 and is currently going for her MBA. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Christina.
Of course. So for today's topic, I want to discuss the different strategies that you might use for hyper-vulnerable customers. But before we get into that, can you tell me a little bit more about how you found your way to Emerita?
I was actually recruited for this position. When I made that transition over to the corporate world, I worked for an infusion company, and the infusion world is pretty small. It's up and coming, so not a ton of companies out there. So they're well knit together, and I think just word of mouth got out. Recruiters saw that I had that infusion experience, which is absolutely critical for working in this revenue cycle management world. So we got recruited. I interviewed. It was my second time interviewing with the company. So there was a spot that opened up that was perfect for, you know, my skill set.
And I'm sure going from that private business that you owned made sense, right? I'm sure we can touch on this more later, but you probably picked up some strategies that make sense to apply to your current role, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my own business doing medical billing and coding, and that kind of evolved to a management position in private practice. And when I worked in private practice, I worked with a family clinician, and there was a wide range of, you know, coding and payers that you work with. And transitioning to the corporate world was more of a learning curve in terms of corporate strategy, as opposed to just the actual medical billing and coding world. Now, infusion therapy is very specific, especially when it comes to medications and treatments and therapies and coding. So it was, you know, just adjusting a little bit, more of a pivot than a true transition. So,
right. And that's a good transition into talking about Emerita. So Emerita is a pharmaceutical company focused on providing complex therapies and personalized clinical services for acute and chronic health conditions. So with that being the area that you're collecting in, can you tell me about the strategies that you and your team use to work with these customers who are in this particularly vulnerable position?
Yeah, absolutely. So anytime you're relating to a healthcare position, you know, you have to take into consideration that you're working with patients here. And we can touch more on the customer versus the consumer and how that applies to collection specifically. But in terms of the patients, we not only do use strategy upfront in hiring people that are skilled to work with the patients and have that level of compassion there, right? So our team is trained and equipped with that skill set, but we also use different strategies that make it tangible for 2024, right? So in this current day and state, we have texting features, we have QR codes in the statements, make it really easy for patients to access, you know, their bills and make their payments. Also, we are implementing like an AP2P strategy, which is going to really put the patients through this algorithm and determine whether they have the ability and the willingness to pay. So we can, you know, target our focus based on where they currently stand. In addition to that, if they don't have the ability to pay, we do have a funding tool that we're going live with that's going to match them up based on their diagnosis or, you know, their treatment and their therapy with a funding organization that can provide that charity funding. That way we don't have a negative impact to our revenue and the patients continue to receive their treatments.
Oh, that's incredible. How did you end up incorporating that into your strategy? Is it something that the company has always been striving for, or is that something that's typical in the industry that you're working in?
I would say it's more typical in the industry, but, you know, again, we had to build this tool internally, and I can't take credit for it. I didn't build it myself, but, you know, we have to have it specific to infusion therapy and then in the treatments that we provide. So while I'm sure there are tools out there that are available, it is just, you know, how can we help the patient really is the core of what we do.
Absolutely. And when you're thinking of the overall patient life cycle and how you make sure that they're still continuing to get their treatment, do you put a lot of emphasis into any kind of pre-delinquency detection when it comes to your overall strategy?
So that is incorporated into the AP2P solution. However, we do make all of our efforts to reach out to the patient, whether it's, you know, sending an email statement, sending a text message, sending an email, and giving a call out to that patient, which I know that you guys talked about on your previous podcast that calling might not always be the best strategy. So definitely have to take a look into some data there surrounding that statistic, I guess.
That's a really good point. And earlier you mentioned the difference between like your patient and a consumer. Do you want to dive into that a little bit and how your collection strategy is differentiating between those two?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when you're in the finance world, the consumer is the customer. Now that's different in healthcare because the consumer is the patient, but the customer would be the payer. So we receive a lot of our revenue from the insurance companies. So there's like a multi-street relationship that we have to maintain for our revenue.
Got it. You know, when I was researching the company, I was wondering how that works. So you basically have two different strategies that you need to approve, right? You have to have the super empathetic and customer-centric one that deals with the patients, but then probably more that aligns with the typical collection strategy of maybe like a bank or something that's dealing with the payer, aka in your case, the insurance company.
Right, exactly. So we do have multiple different teams, and those teams have subject matter experts that focus on that specific payer if it is the payer relation or the payer team, you know, and they have those relationships with payers that work on payer trends. So the behavior of a government payer versus a commercial payer is going to be different. So the strategy for that is a little bit more aggressive, but while you do want to maintain that relationship because we do have contracts as well with these payers. So strategy is definitely different. We have, you know, different strategies for different teams that work based on, you know, their sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So do you have as many options for, you know, reaching out with and engaging the payers as you would the customers? Or is it more so, I don't want to say formal, but more so just like straight to the point of, hey, payer, here is your outstanding payment, and it needs to be due by the state? Like, is it more so communicated via letter and phone call?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. Again, that's going to be very specific to the payer. So it starts with the claim going out the door. And then if the claim gets accepted, it sometimes gets rejected, and that usually prompts a correction on our end. Once the claim is accepted, it's either processed or paid, or it's processed and underpaid, or it's processed and denied. And that's where our team comes in to identify what will we need to do to fix the claim. Get it out the door? Or is it really a, you know, my boss uses this word, a them issue or an us issue? And just identifying that and working through it. The means of communication can be anywhere from a phone call to a portal to sometimes if it gets escalated and there's a huge trend, let's say something was loaded into a system incorrectly causing an influx in denials for a specific code, then we would set up meetings with those payers, the provider representatives.
Very interesting. I could ask more questions about that. But so going back to the patient side of things, because I feel like that's the unique perspective that we don't usually get on this podcast. So I have to imagine that they feel very personally connected to the company, especially making the decision to use Emerita for the specific infusion treatment. Do you, as someone on the collections team, work closely with other members within the organization to ensure that that relationship feels connected and not necessarily like they're being passed from like, basically, here's the people that are going to help you versus here's the people that are now going to collect from you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are always working together with the operations team. We do have a group specific to the customer experience. So they're usually brought in, especially during implementation of anything new, and then our marketing team as well. And we all collaborate from, full revenue cycle management in that patient journey and map it out to make sure that across the organization, our patients are aware of what to expect. Our teams are aware of what to expect and how do we collaborate in a way that makes that patient journey flow as smoothly as possible.
And I've been meeting with a lot of people who work at credit unions lately on the podcast. So I'm wondering if it can kind of connect in the way that, do you use information that you get from the people sitting with the patients of like general conversation of anything that could inform their ability or likelihood that they're going to be able to pay on time or maybe they'll be late? Do you use that to inform any kind of your decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the front end, we have a benefits investigation team and they take the patient's insurance information and they run it through to determine, what's their outstanding deductible, what's the potential co-insurance or copay that they will owe. And then they communicate that to the patient. And so the patient is aware of roughly, things can change throughout the course of the treatment. So we can give them a rough estimate of what they can probably expect to owe. And then at that point, the patient can express like, I can or cannot do that. And at that time, we determine, do they qualify for any sort of a copay assistance program? Again, will they qualify for any of this funding? I think I can also elaborate on the patient experience. So at the time, if it's determined that they can't pay, we can't offer any sort of copay assistance because that's usually provided by the manufacturer themselves. The patients are transferred. We have an acute patient specialist team that they work out a payment plan subject to whatever the patient can or cannot do.
Right. You mentioned a lot of means to communicate with, whether it's the payer or the patient, right? So you've got a portal, you have texting, you have QR codes. Are you dabbling in any kind of AI or is your company exploring how AI could help, whether it's patient, payer facing or not, or if it's more so just to help the internal teams?
Yeah, geez, who isn't exploring AI avenues? That's a huge discussion happening in the industry. As of current state, I'm not aware of anything that America is implementing the use of AI in any field. It's something we're definitely open to and exploring. I think with the unknown, there's a lot of risk, especially with, HIPAA regulations. That's at the forefront of what we need to prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I feel like just because you're in such a unique scenario where you have essentially two entirely different strategies based on who you're speaking to, it could help with a decisioning there.
Right. But a lot of it is critical thinking. You have to understand, like when you get this claim denied, you can't just put it through necessarily a bot. And not to say that I'm underestimating AI. I'm sure that the capabilities will get to a point where you can really think through the life cycle of the claim and filter through, where's the problem? But then it's also a matter of what to do for that solution. And it is payer specific. Like I said, sometimes you're going to send a reconsideration. Sometimes you can have the claim sent back for reprocessing. Sometimes it's a denial and an appeal, So I'm sure AI will have that capability soon. But as it currently stands, to my knowledge, AI can help with that decision making, but can't complete the task.
Yeah, absolutely. We're very much in the camp of it's used to help, not to replace.
Right, exactly. Someone once said, AI is not going to replace your job, but the person who can use it will.
So. Oh, I haven't heard that yet. Michelle, it was really great having you today. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about before we sign off?
I don't think I have anything right now.
Great. Thank you so much, of course, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too. Thanks for having me.